Welcome to Bristol Radio, your home for Bristol Motor Speedway and Dragway podcasts, soundbites, and more. For more Bristol content, visit bristolmotorspeedway.com.
Hi, everyone. It's David McGee, and I'm back with Chapter 2 of Tales of Bristol Motor Speedway, a book that I wrote a few years ago that traces the history of BMS. So here we go with Chapter 2. It's entitled Good Neighbors. July 30th, 1961 began like most Sundays for Philip Earhart, who milked his cows, changed clothes, and took his family to the Bluntville Presbyterian Church in Bluntville, Tennessee. But this wasn't any Sunday. It was the day they would run the first Volunteer 500 at the new Bristol International Speedway right next to Earhart's dairy farm. We were at church, and Daddy came out between Sunday school and church and saw that it was just a steady stream of traffic, Charles Earhart recalled. So he decided he'd better come home to see what was going on. When he got here, they had torn down all his fences walking across the field. Earhart owned about 125 acres next to and across the highway from the new speedway. So when parking lots on racetrack property filled, fans began parking in his fields or walking through them to reach the track. Philip Earhart and his nephew Sidney Patton spent most of that afternoon fixing those fences. I told him not to, Patton recalled, because we just have to fix them back once it was over. And we did. They tore every one of them down again. Charles, who was sixth at the time, said that his father planned to make the crowd go around his property after the race ended, but that was soon overwhelmed. Well, he would stop one, 10 would go by, Charles Earhart said, so they worked until after dark fixing the fences again. Earhart and other wary neighbors didn't know what to expect, but Patton believes that first race brought what was probably the biggest crowd that has ever been seen around here at the time. Their first indication of what was to come occurred a few days before the race. A man came and offered my father $1,000 to rent the field and park cars, Earhart said. But Daddy told him he'd never make that living on Sundays, and he wasn't about to start. After that first race, I guess he figured if you can't beat them, join them. The second race, we started parking cars, and it has developed into what it is today. It is Earhart Campground, the first among the largest and easily the most commercially developed such enterprise surrounding the Speedway property on race weekends. Once a large dairy farm, the Earhart family's acreage on both sides of U.S. Highway 11 East now yields mostly hay each summer. For most of the past five decades, however, campers and fans who parked there had to contend with what cattle leave behind. The fresh cow patties out there, the women would trip in it and they think it was gross, Earhart said, but the men would think it was the funniest thing that ever happened. One fan in particular may never forget, no matter how hard he tries, a late night stroll across the Earhart property. It was the August race, Charles said, and we had just scraped the barn. You don't have very much manure in the summer because the cattle are out in the field all the time, so it wasn't much more than 2 feet deep. But a gentleman had left the race halfway through. He was looking for his car and walked out into that pile of manure. He lost his balance and fell on his back. He looked like a fish flopping. Earhart said another man picked up the unfortunate fella, led him over to the barn, and used a water hose to try to wash away the mess. No telling how many miles they had to drive home, but that smell would never come out of the car. Never, Earhart said. The cattle are gone now, relocated to other family property, and the Earharts have expanded the campground's commercial display space so that the makers of pickup trucks and cellular phones not allowed on Speedway property can promote their wares. Much like successful crops, what began with a couple rows of trailers selling souvenirs has grown wildly. We have about as much to offer as the track, Earhart said. Everything is numbers with these companies. How many people go through their exhibit? With our proximity, we have as many or more people who walk through our property than actually park here. Entertaining fans has also meant hosting everything from cornhole tournaments to concerts. People like Dierks Bentley, Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver, Blue Highway, Travis Tritt, Rhonda Vincent. Fans have become loyal customers, including an amazing group who each summer line their motorhomes along a gravel road at the front of the Erhard property to camp for days and weeks without the benefit of hookups. Their arrival, usually about 3 weeks ahead of the August race, signals the unofficial beginning of summer race season in Bristol. Earhart isn't sure why they come so early, but he appreciates their loyalty and their enthusiasm. After working with every Speedway owner from Larry Carrier, Carl Moore, and R.G. Pope to Lanny Hester and Gary Baker, Warner Hodgson, Carrier again, and now Bruton Smith, Earhart believes all have benefited. "I'm real proud of our relationship with the track," Earhart said. "They do a lot for us, and we do a lot for them. I don't know if I was lucky or had the foresight to make investments in earlier years, but I feel like some of what we had developed has helped in their growth." That's Chapter 2 from Tales of Bristol Motor Speedway.
Thanks for listening to Bristol Radio. If you haven't yet, please subscribe or follow the Bristol Radio Podcast Network for everything new from Thunder Valley. Also, please rate and review the show and share this episode on social media, tag us, and use the hashtag #ItsBristolBaby. See you next time.